Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're here to really pull out the key knowledge from the sources you share, basically giving you a shortcut to getting up to speed. Today, our mission is pretty specific, actually. We're tracing how, you know, those digital playgrounds of the video games we played as kids can actually become serious training grounds for professional skills. And we're focusing specifically on the insights of Phil Warnath. He's a designer in mobility and tech, calls himself a unicorn, which I find interesting.
Right, a unicorn, because he combines that creative design side with a really deep focus on data, metrics, systems, stuff like that.
Exactly. And he claims it all started not in some fancy school, but with classic video games.
Yeah, and that's where we want to push past just, remember this game. It's about seeing them as, like, powerful simulations. We've got sources linking Phil's own story to academic research on virtual architecture, digital identity, even serious games and urban planning. So we're going to show how these virtual spaces really teach systems thinking, understanding how environments shape behavior.
Okay, let's dive in then. First stop on Phil Warnath's journey. Roller Coaster Tycoon. Many of us probably remember the frustration. Phil says this was where he learned a fundamental design truth, long before maybe knowing the terms UX or UI. It's about designing for user satisfaction, for performance, not just what looks cool.
It's fascinating, isn't it? How RCT just throws you straight into a closed system defined by metrics. So Phil wasn't just, you know, dropping paths aesthetically pleasingly. He was running a business simulation in real time.
The instant feedback, right. Like harsh feedback sometimes.
Oh, totally unforgiving. Queue line too long. Guests bail. Skimp on maintenance. Rides break. People get unhappy. Very unhappy.
Okay, but how does that digital theme park chaos really connect to something like corporate key performance indicators, KPIs? Seems like a jump.
Well, it forces you constantly to juggle competing goals. That amazing roller coaster you designed might be a financial disaster. You have to balance the cost of building it, the capex against the running costs, the opex, staffing, repairs, all while trying to get as many happy people through as possible. Throughput.
Wow. So he's managing capex versus opex, optimizing flow, just by deciding where to put a balloon stall or how much to pay a virtual mechanic.
Precisely. The sources call it an early apprenticeship in systems design. It wasn't just art class. It was performance management, operational detail, managing staff schedules for busy areas, seeing how changing a ticket price by like one virtual dollar could swing your profits wildly.
So that blend of artistic vision and hard-nosed business sense. It was being trained right there.
Tested, refined over and over in that sandbox.
Okay, so from the kind of frantic logistics of RCT, Phil Warnath moves to something more intimate, The Sims. He says this was his first real encounter with human-centered design, this idea that spaces, environments, they have to support people, their emotions, interactions, needs.
Yeah, it's just from profit to lived experience. And if you connect that idea to the academic research, especially on communities like Simstagrammers.
Simstagrammers, okay, explain that.
Right, these are Sims players who create really detailed stories with their characters and then post them on actual Instagram.
Huh. So they're publishing virtual lives on a real platform. What does that teach us about design?
Well, the research shows The Sims is this incredible tool for identity construction, for exploring embodiment. You can craft really complex narratives. And the sources mentioned specifically for Warmexen and queer communities how digital spaces can kind of separate the self from the physical body. The Sims lets them find a, quote, new body in the virtual world to re-embody the identity they want to explore.
Yeah, it's pretty deep. So for a designer like Phil, this isn't just empathy. It's like early training in user personas, audience segmentation, understanding all the different, sometimes conflicting needs of users.
Absolutely. Think about modern product design, how it needs that authenticity. It's often performative, right? Mm. Simstagrammers are masters of this. They have to balance the aspirational stuff. Like one user at Jennifer Pravia launched a whole luxury virtual hotel with the relatable everyday moments. They use this technique called calibrated amateurism.
Calibrated amateurism. Give me an example.
Okay, so user at Irafe posted about their sim being sick, but the picture wasn't perfect. In the background, a messy house coat, maybe a bottle of dish soap on the counter.
Ah, okay. Little details.
Exactly. Mundane stuff. Visual cues that signal, you know, relatable imperfection. It's not all glamour. So for a designer, the lesson is your product needs to support both the dream state and the messy, vulnerable reality of the user. It's designing for the whole spectrum of human experience, not just efficiency points.
Okay, that's quite a pivot then.
Yeah.
From the inner psychological spaces of The Sims to, well, the sprawling urban chaos of Grand Theft Auto, San Andreas. Phil Warnath sees GTA not as just, you know, teenage mayhem, but as his ultimate mobility sandbox.
Right, a place to experiment with getting around.
And the lessons seem pretty direct here. He talks about efficiency, resource use, like why own a car when you can borrow one, share one, or just jump on the train.
Which is basically the core idea behind modern car sharing, right? Learned v. virtual Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah.
And moving across that huge map, switching from a car to a bike, maybe grabbing a train, flying a plane, it instantly shows you the importance of seamless connections.
That multimodal integration that real-world mobility planners wrestle with constantly.
Exactly.
And this is where the actual design of the virtual city in the game becomes the lesson. The spatial layout in these open-world games, it's complex. It rewards certain ways of playing. We can actually connect this to some classical architectural ideas.
Okay, lay it out for us. This sounds like it could get a bit theoretical.
Well, in real architecture, think about fancy buildings. There are kind of two main ways designers think about how people move through them. First, there's the promenade architecturale. Think Le Corbusier's Villa Savoye. It's like a guided tour, a specific path designed for you to experience the building in a certain sequence, linear.
Okay, a set route.
Then there's the hotel particular model. It's more like an old complex mansion open, many doors, you can wander around more freely, multi-directional access.
Right, more freedom to explore. So how does that relate to GTA or maybe a game like Hitman?
Modern game level designers consciously mix these. They actually talk about complex levels being like a snail house combined with Swiss cheese.
Snail house and Swiss cheese, okay.
Yeah. The snail house is that main winding path you often follow the first time through, the one that tells the story. The Swiss cheese is all the holes, the shortcuts, the vents, the hidden passages.
The non-linear bits. The ways to break the sequence.
They reward you for mastering the system, for thinking non-linearly, multiple ways to get to the goal.
So Phil Warnath was basically absorbing principles of layered non-linear infrastructure design just by figuring out the quickest way to steal a car or get to a mission marker.
Pretty much. He wasn't just seeing the buildings. He was interacting with the rules embedded in the city's design. The rules of movement, of access. And this is important because it counters that critique some people have of games that just look realistic but are shallow. Those create architectoids, bits of architecture that look real but lack that inner logic, the functional soul of a place.
GTA worked because the rules, mobility rules, economic rules, were baked into the space itself.
Yes, deeply woven in.
Okay, so we've followed Phil Warnath's path. Systems thinking from RCT, empathy and human-centered design from The Sims, complex mobility logistics from GTA. Mm. Now, these skills learned through play are actually being used formally to tackle big design challenges.
Yeah.
We're talking serious gaming.
Absolutely. Those playful lessons are being harnessed now for, you know, complex professional discussions, policymaking. A really good example is this Optimal Mobility Mix card game. Vanort and others developed it specifically to get professional students, too, talking about the tough trade-offs in urban policy.
Optimal Mobility Mix. It uses the 5E framework, right? That sounds like something city planners need. What are the 5Es?
Right. The 5Es are effective mobility, efficient city, economy, environment and health, and equity.
Okay.
And the game's genius is it forces conflict right away. You have a limited budget, virtual money, and you have to decide which goals to fund. So maybe you pour money into efficiency, think fast roads, maybe autonomous vehicles, but that often directly clashes with equity, like affordable, accessible public transport for everyone.
So you can't max out everything. You have to choose what gets sacrificed.
Exactly. It forces that conversation. Which societal goal are we prioritizing over another? Makes the trade-offs painfully clear.
I can imagine those discussions get pretty lively. People come in with different priorities.
They do. And the feedback showed the game was super interactive. People found it relevant, even fun. It makes complex choices transparent. But, and this is important, there was a challenge. When asked how well it reflected reality, the scores were, well, relatively low.
Okay. So that's the tightrope walk, isn't it? Simplify enough to be playable, to understand the system.
But keep enough complexity to be meaningful, to actually reflect the real dilemmas.
Right.
And context mattered hugely. The sources say discussions in India really focused heavily on the equity part, how mobility impacts the poor. Whereas in the USA, the focus shifted more towards emerging tech, high-tech stuff like AVs.
Interesting. So the simplified model still revealed real-world priorities and biases.
Immediately. And this whole idea of using playfulness, it extends to public consultation, too. Think about Minecraft.
Minecraft as a planning tool.
Yeah. It's being used because it's easy, it's playful, people get it. It gives the public a way to actually contribute design ideas in 3D, not just react to complicated blueprints.
Democratizing the process, okay. Moving it beyond just the expert.
Makes it more accessible, uses a language people already understand.
Well, that really brings it full circle. From personal play to building professional skills, now feeding back into public policy and consultation.
Yeah, the big takeaway is that mobility itself, getting around, it's not the ultimate goal. It's always a means to achieve other things, like those 5 E's. Games, by simplifying things and giving clear feedback, they just make those underlying goals and trade-offs really explicit, much better than a dense policy report often does.
And Phil Warnath's journey kind of proves it. Games teach you about systems, sure, but also maybe their limits. The idea is to take that curiosity sparked in the game world
and challenge it hard against the messy complexity of the real world.
Which brings us to our final thought for you, the listener, to chew on. If successful games often have to simplify reality, maybe even fictionalize it a bit, to keep us engaged and teach core ideas, should our real-world architects and city planners maybe embrace a little more artifice? Should they use more fictionalized narratives, perhaps borrowing from that layered, reward-driven design we see in games, to make their proposals for our cities more engaging, easier for all of us to grasp, and ultimately easier to critique? Something to think about.